This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 13th day of February, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Susilo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll take a look at the weather forecast for South America with WillAg meteorologist Ed Keezer, and we'll discuss the cash grain market with Ben Pruce. He's out at the Andersons facility in Everly, Iowa, and we'll do it all right here on this Friday, the 13th edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look now at the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Friday afternoon. The March contract in the corn pit at $3.87 and a quarter, 4 and a quarter cents higher. May futures at $3.95 and a quarter, up 4 and a quarter. And July, $4.02 and three quarters, 4 and a half higher. And December futures at $4.17 and a half, finished 4 and a half cents higher as well in the corn pit. From the soy complex, nearby bean futures at $9.90 and a half cents. That's $9.90 and a half, up 6 and three quarters for the March. The May at $9.94 and three quarters, 8 cents higher. July soybeans $10 even, up 8 and a half cents, and November of next year at $9.71, up 6 and three quarters for the day. Bean meal at $332.30, that's up $1.80, and the bean oil at $32.40, 39 cents higher for the day. The soft red winter wheat and the lead option March at $5.33, up 11 and three quarters. The July at $5.32 and a quarter, 9 and three quarters higher, and the hard red finished $5.62 and three quarters. In the March, 8 and three quarters of a cent higher. July futures at $5.68 and a half, and the hard red winter wheat up 9 and a quarter. From the live cattle futures at $159.60 in the lead option. February, 50 cents higher. April at $153.30, up $2.17 and a half. The feeder cattle for the day at $203.87 and a half in the lead. March up $357 and a half. April at $203.12 and a half, $282 and a half higher. And the lean hogs on the afternoon finished the February at $62 and a nickel, up a dime. April at $66.15, $1.65 higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Now let's check the outside markets. Crude oil for the day at $52.67 a barrel, $1.46 higher. April at $53.56, up $1.40 on the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel for the afternoon. We'll take a look at that number. Oh, we're not going to be able to pull it up. We'll check out what's happening in the Dow Jones Industrial Average instead. It's 17,975. It's up about 43 points. The gold at $1,226, up $6. And the U.S. dollar index at 94.27 is 0.027 higher for the day. Now, let's see what else we have going on for the afternoon. In the weather forecast, mostly cloudy skies, a 28-degree high. A southwest wind at 10 to 13, gusting to 16 tonight, a 20% chance of snow showers. That'll come after 3 a.m., increasing clouds with a low of 22 degrees tonight on a wind out of 9 to 15 miles an hour out of the southwest. And Saturday, scattered snow showers. Those will come before the noon hour. Cloudy, then gradually becoming mostly sunny with the temperature falling to around 10 degrees by 5 in the evening tomorrow. Wind chill values will cool to 10 below to zero. Blustery with a north-northwest wind at 16 to 26 miles an hour, gusting as high as 40. Chance of precipitation on Valentine's Day set at 40%. Saturday night clear with a low of 1 below. Wind chills at 10 to 16 below. And partly sunny then on Sunday with a high near 16 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast in South America when we get to the bottom of the half hour with meteorologist Ed Keezer.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Well, on this Friday afternoon, the 13th day of February, Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, joins us to take a look at what happened in the futures markets for the day. Mike, thanks so much for taking the time. How's the weather there in Atchison?
Well, we're slowly coming up in temperatures at this point, Todd. I think we're breaking 20 degrees at this point, but we've missed quite a bit of precip, and they were calling for substantial precip late this weekend into early next week. But that essentially, in both weather models, has been pulled at this stage of the game. And looking at the afternoon models, we're looking at, and most of Oklahoma and Texas Panhandle also, probably not looking more than maybe a third of an inch over the next 10 days on both the GFS and the European models. So with that worsening drought monitor this week, I suspect it's going to get even worse as we get to next week's reading on Thursday morning.
So is this the reason that the wheat pit was higher, and did it lead everything else up, or was there something else happening today?
Yeah, I think there was something else, and I say that because we made a new weekly high in soft red wheat with the bull spread working, the March wheat beating the new crop July soft red wheat, and that was without the help of hard red winter wheat. We actually did not make any new weekly highs in the hard red, and it was really all about the soft red. So I think there maybe was some spreading going on, but I think the biggest thing was around lunchtime. We got word from a Reuters report that Russia may allocate about one-third of their total wheat stocks directly to Moscow, and this is because Moscow's grain stocks are down about 31% versus a year ago, as there's been kind of a run on bread and a run on wheat. Supplies were already kind of thin before the sanctions came in. They've only gotten worse at this point, plus people have been trying to buy extra. And we've also got overall DEES food inflation. December was up around 15%. So with that, and also the news that they would not, they being Russia, would not exclude the export tariffs in the prospects for Egyptian wheat purchases announced earlier in the day, I think these two things played the biggest role why we were able to see some new weekly highs in the soft red wheat, even without the weather impacting us that much.
And did corn and soybeans follow, or was there something else there too?
I think soybeans have been on their own mindset ever since the USDA report, because they got such a nice report from both domestic and global ending stocks being lower.
Crushing exports both up, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I think most analysts were expecting either the U.S. stocks down and the world stocks the same or higher, or vice versa, but we got exports and, as you say, crush and global demand both up enough that both the U.S. ending stocks and global ending stocks went down. So you throw on top of that too much rain now falling in parts of northern Brazil where they want to get some harvest going. And I think this is where the beans, and especially the bean-corn spread and the bean-corn ratio, really had a lot of play in the market ever since Tuesday's report. And that actually was able to, that ratio, I should say, in the new crop was actually able to erase pretty much all of February's gains in favor of the corn. So now we're back to something like 2.34, 2.35 on the ratio, very favorable to the beans again, which in my view, fundamentally, that's great for the corn, because I've been more worried about beans dragging corn down in this week's trade, and the fact that we saw a new weekly high close in March beans, and it being the leader in percentage terms, you know, took us into the weekend, I think, with some real nice fundamentals and nice technicals.
Okay, on the fundamental side, can you compare what our carryout looks like domestically in the United States, where we're carrying now 385 million bushels at the end of the year, to what the global number looks like, and the percentage decrease in each, or just some kind of comparison that gives me an idea of what global stocks are compared to what our domestic stocks are and really what that means?
Well, I don't think, you know, the global stocks are still massive. I mean, even with the reduction and the prospects for more reductions, because some of the private trade forecasts are well under USDA's 94.5 projection this week. Some are as low as just under 92 million tons. But even if you would take 2 or 3 million tons off of the global soybean ending stocks number, we're still talking about having almost, you know, between 15% and 20% more than last year at this time. And most critical, and I think this maybe is where your question has the most importance, is we're seeing a slowdown in China because of their overcapacity and their problems with their pork sector. And so we've also seen a slowdown in their imports. Their December imports, fantastic. December imports, much, much slower, and actually, you know, quite a bit of talk about that this week. So I don't think that you have a lot of distinction, one over the other being better than the other. I think what's happening is they are having difficulty getting some soybeans out because of their planting delays in the north. Now their harvest delays in the north, and this is just keeping our exports stronger for a longer period of time.
Yeah, so it's a temporary lift. You mentioned overcapacity in China. Is that overcapacity for production of pork, or what kind of overcapacity do they have at this time?
It's almost everything, and it has been part of it has been manufactured by the central government in the way they've been going after the corruption and the anti-graft. You know, I was reading a story just a little bit ago on the India Business Times about how pork was given as a gift right before and during the Lunar New Year by government officials. That is no longer allowed. And so I think there is a lot of different industries between double invoicing of receipts by some provinces and then also the central government trying to limit and cut back on the corruption and the scandals over there. You have overcapacity as a general buzzword. And some of it is because the Europeans and the Japanese and their economies have slowed down, but some of it has been because the central government has been wanting to clean up, so to speak, their house.
Okay, turn your attention to the livestock for me. What are the things that you're watching?
I tell you, Todd, I've had a lot of difficulty with the idea that this Western port strike issue has been hurting our exports, and I know USDA brought in a lower demand figure, an export figure, but that was mainly due to the dollar exchange rate. And when I saw the weekly export sales and some of the export-import data that was released on last Friday, there really isn't much impact going on in the Western port strikes as far as what it's doing to our overall shipments and exports of beef and pork. Fruit is another story, and probably some other commodities are another story. But I think this has been, along with the investment community and the stronger dollar, has been the story to sell off the hog complex in particular. And I think we should be putting a low in the hogs at this point, and especially if the cattle market can find some support, which there again, I think the cash markets are much firmer than what the futures traders are anticipating.
No, it's always good to have a different view. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. We appreciate you taking the time with us today, too.
Have a nice weekend, Todd.
Oh, you too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, joins us here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, and he will be at our All-Day Ag Outlook the 10th day of March. You can, too. All you have to do is buy your ticket, but you need to do that sooner rather than later because they're going quickly. 217-333-7300 right now if you're listening live, or go online at willag.org, and you can order your tickets there. Either way, we hope to see you the 10th day of March for our All-Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Now here's Dave Dickey with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, farmland values declined in parts of the Midwest for the first time in decades last year. The average price of farmland in the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago's district, which includes Illinois, Iowa, and other big farm states, fell 3% in 2014, marking the first annual decline since 1986. Prices for cropland during the fourth quarter remained steady compared with the previous quarter, though half of all respondents say they expect farmland values to decline further in the current quarter. In the St. Louis Feds District, which includes parts of Illinois, Kentucky, and Arkansas, prices for quality farmland gained 8/10 of a percent in the fourth quarter compared with year-ago levels. A growing bipartisan coalition in both houses of Congress is preparing to ramp up efforts to stipulate that currency manipulation is an export subsidy subject to U.S. trade enforcement laws. A proposed House bill would allow U.S. firms to bring countervailing duty cases based on currency manipulation. A nearly identical bill has been introduced in the Senate. Factors such as the size of a country's foreign currency reserves, its current account surplus, and the degree to which it is intervening in foreign exchange markets would be used to test the claim of currency manipulation. A district court judge in Holt County, Nebraska, yesterday issued an injunction that prevents TransCanada from pursuing further eminent domain proceedings on the Keystone XL pipeline. The temporary injunction will require TransCanada to wait until cases filed on benefit of landowners play out in court. The U.S. House of Representatives earlier this week sent a bill to approve the pipeline to President Barack Obama, who is expected to veto the legislation. TransCanada said in a statement yesterday that it intends to reach out to landowners following the court's ruling. TransCanada also says that it is seeking an accelerated trial schedule to expedite the process. An official at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission has authored a study questioning the legality of a common practice by high-frequency trading firms. The study argues that the activity of high-speed pinging, the action of entering small marketable orders to learn about larger hidden orders in dark pools, might be a violation of the Commodity Exchange Act. The study also compared the practice to spoofing, which is the bidding or offering with the intent to cancel right before execution. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media, and he puts together our All-Day Ag Outlook, our annual event. It is the 10th day of March. That's the second Tuesday, a World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate, USDA Report Day. More than a dozen of our regular on-air analysts, plus Sue Martin, plus Chris Hurt, plus Murray Wise, all there for the day at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You should be too. It only costs $25, and you can make your reservation right now at 217-333-7300. I can't tell you how excited I am to have Dave there, to have all of the analysts there, and to have you there too. But you have to get your reservation in right now. Tickets are going pretty quickly. 217-333-7300 or online where at willag.org. Of course, that's willag.org. University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You know, time's running out for landowners and farmers to decide what to do about the new farm programs. They have until the end of February to make the first two decisions and must make a final choice by March 31st. There are decision aids available on the University of Illinois FarmDoc Daily website. You know, FarmDoc Daily is hosted by the ag economist at the U of I, including ag policy specialist Jonathan Kappas. The homepage includes a link to something called the Farm Bill Toolbox. There, you'll find some decision tools and a brand new link under the resources named Farm Program Decision Guide.
Just a PDF file available on the website. If you go to any of these seminar meetings we're holding around the state, we'll be handing that out there. So it's just, you know, something to take home with you. Go to your landlord, you know, sit down with your brothers and dad over family discussions about what you're going to do. It's all right there.
Right there in an easy-to-download, print-out, and use file. It includes the deadlines, February 27th to make the first two decisions about payment yields and base acre allocation, and March 31st for the final program choice, all of which must be recorded at the local FSA office, the Farm Service Agency. The first two decisions, the ones due February the 27th, well, they should be pretty easy for row crop farmers. Take the highest yields and use the base acre allocation with the most corn acres.
So those can be made now. There's no reason to delay those decisions because your program choice then follows on that for March 31st. And that's the one where we want to know a little bit more about what county yields are going to be for 14. But as far as payment yields and base acres, those can be made now. And there's going to be some tough lines sorting through all that at FSA if landowners aren't getting in there soon.
And the county yields, as released by USDA NAS this month, will help determine how much the Arc County payment will be for last fall's crop. Once those are released, it will be easier to compare Arc County to the other two farm programs, Arc Individual and PLC.
So the county yields will determine what that Arc County payment is, or at least will give us a lot of information about the Arc County payment. We won't know the final numbers until we know what the market or average price is, which won't come out until probably September. But this will be the indicator of what the yields will be that are used to calculate 2014 payments. It's always going to be important, but it's probably more important this year because we have seen such incredibly high yields in many parts of the country for corn especially. And so that's going to really have an impact on our county payments, that county-based revenue, because the county average yield for 14 is what's going to help determine the revenue number. And then whether you're below the 86% of the historic number in order to trigger a payment.
Knowing the approximate 2014 Arc County payment should help farmers make a final farm program choice. It's important to remember the choice is a five-year decision, not a one-year commitment. The online Farm Bill Toolbox walks producers through seven steps in hopes they'll make an informed choice. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Hey, just one quick note on that story. If you want to see the video version of it, or actually more importantly, if you want a direct link to the Farm Bill Toolbox, you can find that on our website at willag.org. It says Farm Doc Daily right there under the Farm Program sign-up deadlines, and you can watch the video. But if you hit Farm Doc Daily in the light blue, it'll take you right to the Farm Bill Toolbox, and you'll learn all about signing up for the farm programs. Now, on the phone line with us to take us through what's been happening in the cash grain market in northwestern Iowa at the Everly, Iowa facility that belongs to the Andersons is Ben Pruse. Hi, Ben. Thanks for being with us. What are conditions like there for basis and such today?
Yeah, afternoon, Todd. What we're seeing on the local cash basis is, quite honestly, we've kind of got through the gut slot right after the first of the year that corn's moving. Basis got pretty soggy, and honestly, we're starting to see basis on the firm. We're starting to see some, we have some orders at option price that are getting filled. We have one ethanol plant right in our backyard that has firmed a dime here in the last 3 days, which is very unusual for us. So that's much appreciated.
Yeah, so farmers are not opening their bin doors, but it's pretty clear they actually still have a great deal of grain on hand, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And long story short, we think, and here's what we're nervous about, is, and we're encouraging guys to get sales on ahead of that, during this time frame, rather, because the grain bins are locked for now, but we do know there's a lot of 18 to 19% corn that went in those grain bins. And when we start to warm up, it feels like if those bins aren't properly managed, we're going to have a ton of quality issues here. That's just no fun for anybody.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk to you in a week.
Thanks, Todd. You bet.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Tortini Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1822, Jeremiah Bailey received a U.S. patent for the first practical grass mowing machine. It was horse-drawn, and the movement of one of its wheels turned gears to spin a vertical shaft with cutting blades. The machine could mow up to 10 acres a day, and it was featured in Mechanics Magazine in 1823.
In 1851, George Brown Good was born. He was the editor of the Fisheries and Fisheries Industries of the United States, while deputy commissioner of the U.S. Commission of Fish and Fisheries. The study attempted to catalog the state of the American fisheries at the time. It described a significant part of the marine environment, with 532 etchings of marine mammals, fish, and shellfish, and it also illustrated fishing vessels, gear, methods, and processing. In 1910, William Shockley was born, an English-American engineer and teacher. He was a co-developer of the transistor, which ushered in the age of microelectronics. And in 1933, the House of Commons defeated a bill that would have prohibited the sale of alcohol in the United Kingdom. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to agricultural programming from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Now let's check the weather forecast with meteorologist Ed Kieser.
Improvement in weather conditions for crops in Brazil and Argentina did come as expected last weekend and early this week. That includes rain in the northern crop areas of Brazil that had been extremely dry since mid-December. Heavy rainfall occurred across the very dry Brazilian states of Goiás, Minas Gerais, and Bahia last weekend, with follow-up scattered thunderstorms early this week. It is likely that the long dry spells significantly reduce yields for first crop corn and soybeans. This rain did, however, end a further deterioration of crops and will help later planted soybeans and second crop corn. Mostly dry weather has returned to Bahia, Minas Gerais, and Goiás, and that will last through the weekend, allowing for first crop harvesting and second crop planting. Showers and thunderstorms are expected to return next week, slowing field work, but providing a follow-up boost in soil moisture. The field work delays should not last too long, as drier weather is expected going into the following weekend and beyond. In recent days, heavy rain has fallen over center-west into parts of South Brazil. Any dry pockets in Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, Paraná, and Santa Catarina have likely disappeared by now. This is an area where rainfall will remain heaviest in the coming week. Some places could become excessively wet, especially in Mato Grosso do Sul and Paraná. Second crop corn planting will be on hold through next week. At least these heaviest rains are shifting north out of waterlogged Rio Grande do Sul. Beneficial, mostly dry weather is expected through the weekend, and then just average rainfall is expected next week. This will improve field conditions in the southernmost state of Brazil. In Argentina, the wettest areas during January were drier this week, allowing for a reduction in standing water and overall improvement in field conditions. Mostly dry weather will continue through this weekend. Then scattered showers and thunderstorms return on a periodic basis next week. That should bring sufficient rainfall to most areas without fields becoming too wet or too dry. The bottom line is no problematic weather is in the forecast for Argentina in the upcoming week. That is your South American weather update. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
Time is running out to get your tickets for the 2015 All-Day Ag Outlook meeting. It's set for March 10th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Our analysts will discuss the day's news, a fresh WASDE report for corn, soybeans, and cash grain, and whatever else you want to talk about. Sue Martin will deliver a keynote. Murray Wise will give us his projections for land values. And Chris Hurt will take us through his livestock projections. Cost for the meeting is $25 and includes a continental breakfast and Beef House lunch. Get your tickets by calling 217-333-7300 or online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.